It's Tuesday, March 18th, 2014, and you're listening to episode 334 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 41 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Wayne.
My name's Chad.
And by the way, for anyone who's wondering, Johan, no, he's not like dead or gone or anything like that.
We just kicked him off the show.
Johan, he had to go through a job change where for a while he was working second shift. It was pretty much messed up his life.
Second shift is dead to and the world, man. That sucks.
He is now back to working first shift. And once he gets a couple of things under control, he will be joining us again. So
he needs to come up so he can sign my copy of Sojourn.
Yeah, we need our Aunt Flo back.
That's right.
And Chad started the process of getting autographs. We were talking about this, is where do you autograph a book that is a bunch of
Wayne,
short
Wayne
stories?
Was my first person that I had autographed my copy of Sojourn. I have the first book to be autographed by one of the authors. Wayne
and
was
Beth
the first,
has the second.
And Beth has the second. And Wayne asked me, he's like, where do you want me to sign this? And I'm like,
I know for a fact that is not the case.
You crusher of hopes and dreams, you bastard. Aw, I'm not special. No, I am special. I won an innie, so screw you.
Is Chad the first one to have one signed by two authors?
Yes.
So, okay. So anyway, Wayne asked me, where do you want this signed at? And I'm like, you know, I don't really care, but I guess that is a valid question.
Right, so after I ask, why do you want my autograph? You see me every Sunday.
I'm a super fan. But I was like, wherever you sign it or however you do it, that's going to influence the format of everybody else who signs it. Because I'm going to try and get everybody to sign this book. And so what did you do?
What I decided on is by each of the stories, under the author's description, there is a open spot. So that is where I signed. So I could sign a personalized message, and it's on the first page of my story. Mm-hmm. So that's what Beth did in yours, and that's what I did in Beth's as well.
Yep.
And once again, if you've not picked up your copy yet, I'll be sure to put a link to that in the show notes.
And if you don't want to buy it online, we will have it at Fear the Con, and I'm sure you're going to be there.
Absolutely. I know all of you are going to be there. All right. So another thing that we've got that we're going to start probably within a week or so of this podcast dropping, maybe a week and a half.
Hookers and Blow?
Oh, no.
Start?
Start, yeah.
Please.
That's like Chris is going to start being old or Pat's going to start being perverted. I mean, where have you been? Soulless ginger.
I've been writing short stories for Sojourn, too. That'll come out after, you know, whenever it comes out. So in the meantime, buy Sojourn.
It will not come out after it comes out. It will come out at the exact time it comes out. Because Sojourn is never early and it is never late. It is there exactly when it intends to be. So anyway, there's something that Chad and I have been kind of kicking around for a while, and we decided to actually do. So we're going to go to Massachusetts, and no. But what
all the fanfickers were right.
Done. But what we're going to do is we have set up. I say we, Chad. Yeah. I funded it, so I said as we.
You can say we. We're going to be content creators together.
We have set up a Twitch TV channel, and what we are going to use it for is Chad and I, in our spare time, every so often we go through these phases where he and I play two-player games together. You know, we'll play them once or twice a week or whatever. We really get into them. We develop stories around them. We're telling jokes while we do it. We're carrying on conversations about all sorts of random stuff. And the one that we've got coming up that we're going to do is, well, like I said, within about a week and a half, we are going to start a game of Rome 2, where he will be playing Rome, House of Julia. Have you decided yet?
Yeah.
Okay.
House of Julia. Yes. No joke. House of Julia. Yes.
And I will be playing Macedon, or Macedon, if you prefer the Greek pronunciation. But I'll be playing Macedon.
And this is Total War Rome 2.
Yeah,
there
Total
is
War,
actually
Rome
a
2.
Rome 2 game that isn't Total War.
Oh,
we're not
it's
doing.
There.
Yeah.
Okay, we're playing Total War Rome 2. And we are going to have this on a Twitch TV channel. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to put a link in the show notes to the Twitch TV channel. Mm-hmm. And we will also be keeping both on the Twitch TV channel and on our forum somewhere a list of upcoming times that we'll be playing. So we'll tell you, hey, we're going to be playing on this coming Wednesday from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. or whatever. And now here's what we're inviting you guys to do. We want you guys to hop on, and you may get some enjoyment out of watching us play these games. Because like our Rome 2 game, at least our last one,
which was pretty epic.
It was really epic, and it was a tight game. I mean, we were not steamrolling the computer. But the other thing is that this is an opportunity, if you want to interact with us. So if you want to get on the chat and ask us questions or comment on how we're playing
the game. We'll talk about
anything. Yeah, or ask us to talk about something, or even just sit there and lurk and just watch what it is that Chad and I BS about when...
We think no one's listening.
And, you know, we really invite you to do it. And like I said, if you want to give us comments on the game or ask us questions about our own lives or whatever, I mean, within reason, it's kind of an anything goes sort of lounge. Be sure to check that out. Now, we're not going to set a schedule for that like the podcast.
It's, that was one of the things we talked about, how we wanted to do this. We didn't want to do, okay, Thursday night, starting at 7, going to 11, every Thursday night, we're going to be playing Rome 2. And it's just like, that's not how we actually play video games. So while it would be easier for people to get on and make time for it, that would really burn us out quick. So what we kind of want to do is we want to do what we are calling a season. And a season is going to be us playing
a game.
And then we'll take a break. And then we'll see what other people, if it was popular, if we're still into it, if people want us to play another game specifically, then season two might be like Civ 5. And within those seasons, we're going to do about a week to 2 weeks of a schedule where we say, okay, you know, Monday, Thursday, we're playing this time to this time. Saturday, we're doing a big marathon. Then week two, we might do Monday, Wednesday, and then only a half day on Saturday. You know, we do want to give you guys a schedule because it's not like YouTube. It's not like... We do the video, we do the stream, and it's saved off, and you can go and watch it later, because it's not like that.
It's live.
It's live. We do understand we need to kind of give people a schedule to go to, but also, again, we just don't want to hold ourselves to it so bad to where we get burned out.
We'll try to put up what we're going to be playing and win a couple days in advance, so you guys can take a look at that and see if you want to stop by. I mean, whether it's for the whole time or 5 minutes, you know.
And we'll blast it out on social media, too.
Yeah. So
I have to say, this is a concept I just personally don't get. Mm-hmm. I know Twitch TV is popular. I know people, you know, watch it frequently. Personally, the idea of watching someone play a video game sounds like the most boring, teeth-pulling thing in the world.
Well, here's the thing about it. So the setup of it is it's like YouTube in that when you go to the site, you go to twitch.tv/fear_the_boot. That takes you to our page. If you go there now, it says not live. There's a gray screen, nothing showing. But if I were streaming something, you would see on this YouTube style player, this big square, you would see the game as it appears on my screen. Maybe a 30-second delay to it. But you hear us talking. So we've got headsets and mics on. You hear the game sounds and then you hear Dan and I talking. And there is a chat sort of media thing on a sidebar where people can type in and talk about the game. They can talk to each other. They can ask us questions. And now we're Fear the Boot. We're not really just going to sit there and go, okay, I move this unit. Oh, look, so-and-so 332 wants us to move the other unit. I move that unit. It's more of an interaction thing. We're going to be hanging out. We're going to be talking.
Chad and I have a laundry list of inside jokes that have come from these games. I mean, hell, let's go way back. Now, this is before Twitch TV. That's how the whole XCOM thing got to start.
Yeah.
Was people watching me play XCOM and I just started narrating.
Imagine
it.
Dan doing his XCOM stories that he was running on the RSS feed. Only you can log into Twitch TV and watch him play as he's so doing it and talk to him and ask him questions.
Yeah, so instead of a bullet pointed recap, you could actually watch it unfold, hear me describe why I see the situation the way I do, and interact and say, you know, I wonder about this or I wonder about that. Or hell, if you're represented in there, which you were, Wayne, until you died, then you could come in and say, this is what I would do, or this is how I would react to that situation. So
is Julia still alive?
Yeah, Julia's still alive.
Yeah, high five. I'm still alive, girl.
So. All right. And for anyone who's wondering about the XCOM saga, I will get back to that. Between working on Sojourn, I mean, really heavily, because I mean, that took a lot of stuff.
Hey, look at it this way, Dan. You can Twitch it too.
Well,
or Twitch TV. I don't see. We know so little about it. That's another thing is that when we do this Twitch TV thing, we've never done anything like this, and Dan and I don't watch anything on Twitch TV. So it's going to be like the podcast.
We're just going to make
Yeah, we're just going to go with it. And people are going to be like, well, you can't do that on Twitch TV.
We just did. With the XCOM thing, I got part of the reason I was so far behind is I was working on that whole Sojourn thing, which, as I said, I know I post on social media. I played that whole thing intentionally pretty close to the chest because of Fear the Boot's history of talking about things we don't deliver. And so I wanted to get it done and delivered, which is why I wasn't talking about it. I'm going to be going on a vacation for about a week and a half. But when I get back from that, I will look back into getting the XCOM saga started up again, because it was actually pretty close to finished. Mm-hmm. It was like probably about 2 or 3 months of game time from done. But anyway, let's get into an RPG topic. Today, what we's going to talk about is campaign starts. There's an issue that... Gnarl's not an issue.
Best campaign start I've ever done in my life started with Gnarl.
Yes, and that actually is one of the examples, not because it involved Gnarl, though now in retrospect, maybe because it involved Gnarl, that I wanted to use. Because here's the thing. One of the problems that I think a lot of game masters struggle with, and I've seen a lot of players complain about, and I don't know that we've really sufficiently addressed on this show, and I think part of the reason is because it has to be addressed in parts. And I think maybe this is the first chip in addressing that is pacing. Mm-hmm. Role-playing games tend to be paced, well, generally speaking, too slow, to be honest. The things tend to occur at a very, very slow rate. If you think about how much story gets told in an hour of movie. Now, granted, a role-playing game has things going on around the table, people having to look up rules, people going to the bathroom, whatever. But the point still is, if you look at what is accomplished in an hour of movie, we do not accomplish that much in 4 hours of gaming most times. Now, I realize there are exceptions to this, and there are some people I've played under who have just done a great job. Pacing's not an issue for them. And for you people, I say, bully for you, hop on the forums and give advice to the people that are struggling with this, because we have heard a lot of people, and I myself will admit this is something that I struggle with. But where we're going to start is at the start, the beginning of a campaign. What you do within the first 30 minutes of that first sitting after character creation's over. So we got our character sheet, round one, Eric Hokra. All right. Now, broadly speaking, there seems to be two extremes. The way that I find tends to go too slow, now maybe you guys have an idea for making it work, is you start the campaign between events. You guys are all sitting in a tavern, the Color Animal Inn. And as you're sitting around the Color Animal Inn, you know, nothing in particular is going on right now. We don't even necessarily know why you're here, apart from maybe some flimsy sort of box text the GM gave you. But then something will happen. The town guard's going to call for you. The king's going to summon you. The mysterious stranger in the corner will hand you a scroll. Something will happen. But the point is, when the game begins, you are between events. The other far extreme is when the game begins, you are in the middle of an event, specifically combat. The game master starts off by saying, okay, Wayne, you are getting shot at. Roll for initiative. And all of a sudden, you as a player have to figure out, oh my gosh, what's going on? And I have to at least give credit to that latter style, that while it's a bit ham-fisted, and if you overuse it, it gets really tired, it can work to get somebody immediately moving in the game.
What I think it helps with for some people is that when you first start a game, you don't really have that feel of the character down yet. Sometimes the feel comes out during a combat. Sometimes it comes out during role play, but it's hard to get that started from zero. It's hard to go from zero to character. And honestly, combat in a lot of games is a crutch. And starting on a combat can help you get into that character right away and then deal with the aftermath, because you don't have to do as much getting in the character's head for a combat.
Well, and there is one obvious thing. Now, once again, I'm still talking to the extremes here. I've got some middle grounds noted out here that we're going to talk about, but still talking this extreme. One of the things combat does is it instantly gives you a reason to care. See, if I'm sitting in a tavern and there's a mysterious guy in the corner, I may or may not care. Now, hopefully the game master, who did the group template right, knows what motivates me, knows what I care about. And so hopefully the game master would not have something going on I don't care about. But I think it is safe to presume that in most role-playing games, you don't want your character to die in a random encounter in the first 30 seconds of the game.
Yeah.
And so you have an immediate reason to care.
Character creation.
Damn it. Traveler method one.
That's right.
There is no method one in Traveler. I think it's all method one. You just roll for a chance to die. But
Traveler character creation is actually a lot of fun if it's being run by Churcher.
Well, yeah, everybody has to go to church, traveler.
Exactly.
If you look, church, yeah, I say if you don't get up early on a Sunday morning, then you need to start so you can go to church or traveler. Yeah,
that's yep. right.
Yeah, I have to ask, if you think back, can you remember the first scene in many of your campaigns, either as a player or a GM? Because I was sitting here thinking about that. I was like, what was the first scene?
Yes, and I kind of actually, remember
I remember the first session,
yeah,
but I can't remember how the first scene.
I can.
I absolutely can remember the Gnarl one.
That is the only one I can remember.
And I was,
as a player,
as a GM, I was so nervous doing it because it was so weird and different.
At least for our group.
Yeah, I thought that I would not pull it off right and it would come off as really lame and stupid, but it was awesome.
Go ahead. This is one of the middle options here, because there's a phrase I want to throw out here, which many of you listening to the podcast will know. Some of you may not. It's a Latin phrase, which is in media res. Mm-hmm. Okay. And what in media res means is it literally means just in the midst of things. So you're in the middle of something. Now, usually when we talk about something like starting a campaign in media res, we're typically using it to refer to combat, but it does not have to be combat. And in this case, we started a game, if you and I are thinking on the same wavelength here, in media res, but it wasn't combat. So how did that one start?
It is the only first scene in a game that I can remember.
I can remember another game that I
Let's start with this one.
How did we start this one?
Gnarl was, I think you were stalking someone. Or there was,
I was stalking someone. They needed to die.
They needed to die. And that's how I did it. I didn't say you. I think I said a hooded figure. And it started off with Gnarl walking down the road. And it was the character of Gnarl, not, well, I guess there is only the character of Gnarl. Dan really isn't Gnarl. But regardless, Gnarl was walking down the road. And then I think I even had you make rolls and stuff like perception check, shadowy.
You treated it like it was a combat.
Yeah. And then I played it off that I had Wayne playing an NPC. I didn't say that. I just said a shadowy figure with a hood or something like that. And I just had Wayne roll the dice for that guy, you know, that sort of thing. And then as the game master, I only gave the details that needed to be given. You were in an amphitheater. You were surrounded by people. But
that part we didn't know.
That part didn't know because
and
it
wasn't
told.
The punchline.
Yeah.
This wasn't a combat. It was a play.
Yes.
Yeah. And the reveal of how it was a play was, like you said, you had us roll for combat. And basically, Gnarl was attacking, you know, basically fighting back. And there's this role, and I'm thinking, Gnarl is big and powerful, and I'm a really weak little bard, and I'm about to die. And you describe the damage as red flyers.
Yeah, as ribbons.
I got to say, Chad, this is a testament to my trust for you as a game master, because you know how I feel about party and fighting. You know, and so the minute that I realized that it was not an NPC, but I was fighting Wayne, the fact that I rolled with it and did not immediately like, whoa, WTF, I did not sign up for this, is a testament to my trust for you as a GM, because I just went with it. Mm-hmm. It was probably also part of the fact that what Wayne just said, that I knew as well as he did, that in a fight between Gnarl and Sir William, that's going to be a really short fight. Like literally a one hit, maybe two hit fight.
Sir William, I think, got a stick on you, and then you pulled the sword out, and then, you know, I had the ribbons come out, and then I viewed it as a sort of...
I got a picture from Amanda Morgan of that exact scene of Gnarl with Sir William's fake sword and the prop
doing
from
the underarm thing.
I think I posted this to show us once before. I'll post it again. It's a great picture.
It's an awesome picture.
Yeah, she did a great picture for me.
For me as a player, it was a combination of a couple things. It was a start on action because we were immediately going into action. It was the surprise of it, is a part of it. The subversion of expectations. I had been I had played in a Chad game once before. I had expected it to start one of a couple different ways. That was not one I had anticipated. And then when he starts, and I think we're going down one path, and he completely turns to the right, all of that together made it a memorable moment.
Right. You know, actually, the closest thing I can think of in popular media that it reminds me of, and there's probably better examples, it's just one that comes to my mind, it's the start of Star Trek II, where you get the sense they're starting off, the movie starts off, you think, the first time you saw it, assuming you didn't already know going into it, that you've got the Enterprise commanded by someone you've never seen before being destroyed by three Klingon D7s. You watch Spock die and McCoy die and all these things happen and they're abandoning the ship. And then it turns out the whole thing was actually a game. It was, well, I mean, not a game. It was a test. It was a simulation. It wasn't real. And, you know, you get that kind of subversion of expectations. I think there's really two/three questions I want to look at here. The first is, can you make either extreme work? And that's why I say it's one or two questions. I guess depending on how you look at it. And then the other is, what are some points such as this one, such as the in media res, but it's not combat, that we can draw in the middle? So let's start with that question. Let's say you want to start not in media res, not in the midst of things. You're starting between events. Are there ways to make that work?
I ran a game one time where it was like a fantasy game, and I had read, and this was years ago, we might have even talked about it on the show, but like in the early days, the first handful of episodes, where I read an article about how there was an eruption of a volcano in medieval Europe, and it was one of those powerful Mount St. Helens type big bang eruptions, and it described it like 13th century, it was snowing in summer. But it wasn't snow, it was ash falling from the clouds, and it blacked out the sun for like a week and that sort of thing. And I was like, wow, that is so cool. I want to incorporate that in my game. And so I opened up the game with that, not with a big bang and not with a combat, with the absolute most boring thing you can start a game with, of the characters in a wagon and their horses going down a road. And then it starts to snow, but it's July. And oh my God, what is going on? Because they don't know anything about the volcano. Volcano was 1,000 miles away. And, you know, it's a portent of some strangeness happening. And, you know, in the snow and the ash kept building up and building up, and they had to fight through this ash, but the darkness wasn't going away. And what's this mystery? But I subverted it too, because I made more immediate concerns than the mystery of why ash was falling. And then they ascribed the ash to what they were dealing with. There's a great magical evil and that sort of thing.
You know, actually, not to jump back on Sojourn again, but one of the things that I really had to be sure I got down right.
Now, Dan, you can't talk about Sojourn that much until you win some awards.
I know. All right. But
that's the Chad Watley.
But here's the thing. Think about this like a novel.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the most important things of a novel is how it opens.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the fact that this is your opportunity as a writer to get the reader's attention. Now, most readers will stick with you at least for a couple pages, maybe a couple chapters before they give up bored. But if you can grab them from the first sentence on, so much the better. I'll link this in the show notes, but there's a great list someone put together. And of course, it's subjective.
Steel Beach. First sentence of the first chapter is, in 50 years, man will no longer need the human penis. And it grabs you. Right? Kind of paraphrase. It's not exactly how the sentence was worded, but that's the gist of it.
My.
What does that mean? And it goes into, you know, what he talks about it. And it's about transhumanism.
Well, right.
The first sentence grabs you.
Yeah, this... in an uncomfortable way.
Yes, it does.
This list gives, like, the... This list gives 100 first sentences from famous novels and plays and such that it considers to be exemplary of ones that just grab you right out of the gate. And I think in a role-playing game, I'm not saying this is the only way to start a game, but one of the things you do have to look at is, do I have their attention? Because Wayne is absolutely right that the start of any role-playing game is really awkward, even if you're with your normal group. Because of the fact you don't quite know how your character is going to work. You certainly don't know how everyone else's character is going to work. Rapport, even though supposedly this group's been together for the past 10 years, if that's your setup, that rapport has not actually been played out. And it's a very awkward time. And the game master, I think, has to push a little bit harder to get people bought in and moving in a direction so stories and rapport and actions start building.
And it's difficult if you're starting with individual characters, too. Let's go back to FearTheCon 3 when you were running a Transformers game. You made a comment afterwards that was one thing you regretted was how you started the game.
Yes.
Was that you start with one character, they wake up, they do their introduction, and then they go meet the second character.
Oh,
and I've only had that
logical but brutal.
I've only had that work well in one campaign, and I think it was somewhat unique to how that campaign worked. It was a Star Trek game. And what I was doing was I was playing it and I think I talked to the guy who's playing the captain. I said, do you want to be brand new to the ship or you've had it for a while? And I think he chose that he'd had it for a little bit. But we were playing it off as he had taken some damage, something had happened to it, and the ship was coming back in to pick up a significant amount of new crew. And I got to his character last because as the captain, you know, he's got the Dossies. He ought to know something about his crew. And so what I did was I started with I don't remember, just two of the characters. I don't remember which two. I'll just say, like, it was, I don't know, the helmsman, the medical officer. And they're, like, walking down a hallway talking. And I started them off that way. And they were all on their way to report for duty. And what I did is I kept bringing in one character after another. And by the time they showed up, the crew had already formed a rapport that the captain, who had yet to enter the scene, the player now had a read on his own crew. And he was able to jump in as if they had already known each other, even though from an out-of-character, in-character bridge perspective, that really hadn't occurred.
Yeah. I've seen the type entrance of the one character, then another character, then another character done. And more than I think about it, I've done it myself. And it just typically, it doesn't work well.
The rough thing about grabbing all the characters at once is it's like yelling into a crowd, somebody call 911. Nobody really is certain what anyone else is going to do. And everyone gets really... Whereas if you grab one person and say...
It's good and bad for that reason.
I mean,
it's good because you can then... force someone to interact with you. It's bad because if you have five players, the fifth player is sitting there waiting the whole time.
Well, and that was my big mistake in Fear the Con. Not only did it take longer than I wanted, in a con game, you don't have that kind of time. You know, you can't blow off an hour of the game.
You know, what I do in Lucid, when I run it, the game itself does not prescribe that you have to run it this way. But when I run it, what I do is I have the guy who's the leader... he rounds everybody up. I usually set it up in some funny way where it's like the first 5 minutes, I have that guy and he gets the job. Usually guys in a limousine pull up and some big gorillas come out and throw him in the limousine and he gets the job.
Literal gorillas.
Literal gorilla. Well, I mean, it takes place in your dreams,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, why not?
And then the limousine flies away. But the...
And it's the Oscar Mayer Wiener
that's
truck.
Right.
It's actually not a limousine at all.
That's right. So he gets thrown in, he gets the job. And usually there's a twist to, you know, there's like some screw over or something like that. And he has to pull the team together. And so this is lazy GMing. I sit back and I let him pull the team together. And I put the team and I make it to where he has to call. He just can't say, everybody meet me at the clubhouse, right? At the Color Animal Inn. I have them starting in Milan. I have them starting in Egypt. I have them starting in Japan. I have them starting in New York and Washington, D.C., all over the place. And what I do is I put a little twist on each of the characters in their locations. And so, you know, he calls up the first guy, and I usually like having an American in Paris. And I say, you're in Paris, and you're holding the smallest cup of coffee you've ever seen.
Is that a book?
I don't know.
An American in Paris?
Well, probably. Well, anyway, I just like this image of this big American looking at this tiny, tiny coffee cup, like, what the f- is this? And then it starts the conversation. And then usually I go to like Morocco or somewhere like that. And the guy's getting chased and shot at. And he's on the phone. His deal just went bad. He needs some upfront money to get the F out of Dodge. And then, you know, but they're quick hits.
Right.
That's the thing, is that they're quick hits.
And I think that's something that you can do if you're choosing the between events way of starting the game. Is you have to make something else interesting. It could be an NPC. Mm-hmm. You could have a really colorful NPC. They're not doing per se anything in particular, but one of my favorites is an old couple bickering. For some reason, as a GM, I just have that one locked down. I can pull that one out.
I do tiny coffee. Dan does an old couple bickering.
Yeah, old couple bickering. And they will draw in whoever it is, like one of the player characters. But that NPC forces action, gets people interested. In your case, you're going down a road on a cart. Okay, not all that exciting.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, ash starts falling on around you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, setting just got interesting.
Right.
You know, and...
Something has to pop.
Something has to pop specifically that invites a player character response. You have to... It's one thing, the old thing, you don't say, somebody call 911. You have to be able to point at somebody and say... You, Wayne, call 911.
And people could look at that. It's like, oh, yeah, someone's got pop. How about we have the guns pop and we'll start in combat? And to me, yes, that fits what we're saying. And there's nothing wrong with that. I've done it. I've been a part of it. That's cool. It's the easy way out. Well, it's done.
That's
it's
what I'm going to leave as. I don't think it's wrong.
Yeah.
I just think that there's a real risk that as a game master, it becomes too commonplace.
And it's also kind of has that feel of, okay, everybody got your dice, you got your pens, your pencils. Wayne, you got your soda? Good, good. You got Beth's coming out. All right. roll initiative, well, Arrow Cochran. It's just like, oh, God.
And on the other end of it, on the other side of the extreme, I remember now how I started the dressing. I don't remember the first scene because it's not memorable. Mm-hmm. But I remember I went around with each character and they somehow either got an invite or they learned of a meeting that was happening.
Yeah.
And when I think back about it, what I should have done then was move that forward and started with each of them arriving.
Actually,
at that
Wayne,
meeting.
I've got an even better way you could have done it than that. Sure, you'd have them arriving at the meeting. I think you could have done the invitations. Don't role play them out. Hand them each an invitation.
Mm-hmm.
Who says the game master talking has to be the first thing to happen in a game?
That's right.
By the way, for anyone listening to this, if you're hearing some background noise, there's not a whole lot I can do about that. A huge rainstorm just hit. And
turn the lightning off, Dan.
Yeah, there's only so much that this gate, is the gate being a noise gate, is going to block out. What are some middle ways you can start the game? We talked about in media res, but the in media res is not combat.
Yeah.
What are some other ways you guys have seen campaigns start that you thought went really well, but, you know, once again, it was not per se.
You can always do the "No, I want you to die, Mr. Bond" opening, which is you take one of the main characters. You haven't played a single game yet, and it's the great way to introduce the main villain. You take one of the characters and you strap him to a table and you have a death ray about to cut him in half. Do you expect me to talk? "No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die." And then the other characters leap in and save them if you have like a sort of swashbuckling action type of game.
And hopefully it goes better than it did in Mystery Men.
That's true.
So it wasn't a campaign, but in the very first Bard's Bard, everyone was gathered in front of the king. Mm-hmm. And I went around and was like, okay, for each one of you, tell me, why did your ruler want you dead?
Yes, lazy GMing.
Each one had to explain that as they went around. And that was their backstory of how they ended up there when the king asked for your bravest warriors. They sent the bards they wanted to be killed.
Nice.
And I was thinking about that. Is that I would love to do a game at some point where it starts off with...
why are you in prison?
You find yourself being flung through a window, falling to the ground, thinking, not again. How'd you end up in that situation?
Well, and I think there's another thing you can look at, too, which is shorten a line. Here's what I mean.
My bowl of daisies?
There's two points, really, that you're trying to connect, which is a game, we'll hope, has a plot. Okay, I guess it could be a sandbox game or a character-driven game, but generally speaking, a game has a plot. A game has something that's supposed to be going on. And obviously, you want your players to find out something about that. I mean, not the whole shebang, but you want to find out something. Okay, you need to go to this mountain.
Like, in my example, they were getting that from the king. They're there.
Right.
They're already there. The backstory was to get them thinking about the character and starting to talk.
Before that, obviously, you have to start the campaign. Okay? Mm-hmm. You have to start by saying something to somebody, whether it's about setting action, whatever. Yeah. But I think something you can look at is just, what is the shortest route from point A to point B? Because I think a lot of game masters, and I myself have been guilty of this, tend to think of them as two unrelated. Point A is introducing the characters. Point B is beginning the plot. Well, why do I have to look at it that way? That's really a false dilemma or a false dichotomy. I really ought to be thinking, well, wait a minute. Why can't I immediately introduce the characters in the process of discovering the plot? Why do I have to have that, you know, these two points here with a line between them? Or if I absolutely feel I must have those two points, what can I do to get that line as short as possible? So the time spent from my first word to the first thing I actually say about the plot they're dealing with, that's as little time as possible.
Yeah, and like I was saying with that Dresden game, as I think about it, that was one of my big problems, was I had too much space in there. I wanted to let them wander around and come up with ideas and figure out how they were going to sneak in, when in reality, to get to the plot, they needed to be there. So why didn't I just
have them?
I love
there.
Your idea of giving the invitations to the people that got it, and then just setting the people up that snuck in as you snuck in.
Right.
And then just foregoing that whole day and starting right there with the handouts and such.
Yeah. And not to criticize you too much on this, one of the things that you jolted my memory is that there were people who weren't invited and they snuck in. That was part of them getting in. And you had them revealed almost instantly because it was the drive to get the characters together. If they were hiding, they can't get together. Even that little bit of specialness that they had by, well, I'm the one who snuck in and made my roles, that was gone. So, again, great game, but you're a newbie GM.
Yeah, it was my first time running a campaign, and as I look back now, I would start it drastically differently. Yeah. I don't remember how I started the second arc, but I know I started it better than the first arc.
Yeah, I started a BattleTech game with a barbecue. You started a Skies of Glass game one time, Dan, with my character history, and I was going through the woods, and I see a dog, and I had a bow and arrow, and I shot the dog, and then a hillbilly came around a corner, around a tree, and was basically like, "You done shot my dog!" And he is about reaching for his iron, and then I whip out another arrow and thung him right in the hip.
Shattered his hip.
Yeah, shattered. I mean, crit roll, bam, dude's dying.
It's kind of that's a graphic game.
So yeah. And yeah, and I remember that because I was like,
Chad was after the meat. He did not realize it was somebody's.
I thought it was a wild dog.
Yeah, he didn't realize it was somebody's hunting dog.
And this guy was about to kill me, and so I had to react. But the way I had made my character, the theme of the game at that period was that everybody was kind of hardened to death, not hardened to them dying, but they were hardened emotionally to the concept of death. And my character really valued human life, and he reacted and had to take a life, and Dan knew this. So my character was like, thunk, thunk, dead, and the guy's dying, and I'm like, oh my God, what have I done?
Well, that's actually the horrible thing, is he wasn't dying. Well, he just had a shattered hip, which means in a survivalist environment, he's as good as
and
dead.
He was asking me to finish him off. Because he was bleeding out there in a horribly painful way, and I'm pleading with him to let me help him. That was pathetic in a way of me, because I couldn't save him. My character wasn't a doctor. We were out in the middle of the woods. I have a first aid kit. And it's just like I was pleading with him not to make me kill him, and he was ordering me to kill him as payment, revenge, or just mercy or anything.
Yeah.
And it was really emotional.
The thing about that start, though, is while it sounds combat.
It was like two rolls. It was just boom, boom.
Well, but here's the thing. It sounds like combat in Meteor Res, but it's not how it started. Mm-hmm. It started off with a scene of you walking through the woods and you see a dog.
And I'm hungry.
The dog didn't attack you.
No.
You know, you could have very well watched the dog. When you shot the dog and the guy came out and drew his gun, you could have offered him payment for it. Mm-hmm. It was reactive. The point is, I did not start off with you see a dog roll initiative.
Right.
You know, that is not what occurred.
That dog's coming right at me.
But I found something that intrigued your character in this case because it was a
like hunger.
Yeah, it was hunger. But here's the point. I gave your character an objective.
Right.
I drew you in by giving your character an immediate objective. You didn't have to come up with in your mind, gee, I'm at a party. What would my character do? Who would he talk to? How would he act? Well, of course, I'm the brooding wallflower. But no.
If only they knew all my secrets. Oh, wait, that was last episode.
But no, it started off with, you have an obvious need.
Yeah.
You're out in the middle of the woods. There's a number of ways you could handle this. You see a dog. You could have followed the dog. You could have ignored the dog. You could have, you know, there's a number of things. You chose to bag the dog.
Yeah.
And then things occurred.
Yes. Mistakes were made. Lessons were learned. I remember I only had 6 bullets and I used one on him. Very first 5 minutes of the game.
The punch
never got another bullet.
Chad did kill him.
Yeah.
One thing I like doing in games sometimes is in a more modern game, an event happening on TV. Everybody, wherever they're at, sees this major event. Could have been a battle, could have been a murder, could have been whatever. It is like the in media res, except you weren't there. You hear the news on it later.
You know, going back to the SOG example, because it's just like, I just sort of barely remembered it. Now that I'm thinking about it, I'm remembering more. It was such a cool scene, and it was so helpful because when I went into town where the other players were and there's the inevitable meetup, instead of saying, well, I have this backstory, let me figure out what I want to read to you so that we can be friends, it was, man, some just went down in the woods. Oh, God, that messed me up. And it's like more emotional. It's more real. The story is there.
Yeah.
And then it can be shared and used in role playing.
The BattleTech game that we had a couple years back here, but relatively recently, how that one started. I do remember the start of it. Wayne was in contract negotiation. It started off with Wayne was sitting there in an office. And I described this kind of rundown, raggedy ass office with a guy who was sitting there chain smoking cigarettes, who was going through these different jobs that he had out in that area. You guys are kind of out along the the periphery or the inner sphere. He had these files he was going through, like kind of reading off the top line, looking like, this one? No? Okay, how about this one? And finally reached a contract, and you guys then had to negotiate out payment and all that such. But the point being, once again, I found something that motivated you pretty instantly, even though it itself was not per se this huge, thick event. You know, this was something akin to sitting in the tavern, but I wasn't waiting on you to find motivation. I started off by giving you motivation. And as soon as I had you walk out of there, if memory serves, I think I had the rest of the group more or less already together that you guys were, because I mean, this was at your mercenary hangout prior to a job. I mean, I think you guys were still in the rec room or at a bar. I don't remember what exactly, but you know, Wayne takes it and then it's like, okay, Wayne, go find your command staff, which just so happens to be the party, and get this rolling. I think that does it for this one. Once again, if you're a GM who doesn't have these types of problems, please do stop by the forums and give your insight to those of us that do. There are one or two other really good game starts I've had, but one of them I'm not sure I want to give away because I actually may use it yet for another campaign.
I want everyone to come into the thread talking about this episode and give us all of their best game starts so I can rip every one of them off and use them in the future.
Yes.
I may give one too and put it under spoiler tags and ask that my own, you know, you guys don't read it because I have a really good game start, but I might want to use it again. So anyway, thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2014. Listeners are free to use this show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.